Access number 30636, Mr. Malcolm Barker, Reel 9. Now, you've just got a couple of things that since our last session you've remembered.
Yes.
One is about when you were building the bunkers. Can you talk to me a bit about that?
Well, when we arrived in Korea at the bottom of the hill where the camp was set up, we had to go up into where the bunkers were. Some had been blown up by the enemy and some had been destroyed by our own people. And therefore, our job was to reconstruct the bunkers, reconstruct the barbed wire, check the minefields. In doing so, in the digging out, wasn't it? We found bodies, skulls, bits of bones, and one young lad grabbed hold of a foot that was sticking out, and the sergeant said, "Well, pull it." And as he pulled it, this boot come off with a bit of a flesh and skeleton boot, in the boot type of thing, and he was sick as a dog. He said, "You're bound to come across bits and pieces and body. Some may be our own, some may be Americans, but 90% of them will be Chinese." So every time we dug and found some, we'd put them into a heap. Then somebody would come along and take them away from us. But they was inside in the trenches in the bunkers, outside, and we filled in craters, reinforced the bunkers, roofs, walkways, and also the barbed wire and minefields.
Now, the other thing you mentioned was the effect of the monsoons. Now, tell us about that. What's it like during the monsoons?
It's very windy, very wet. This is why we have monsoon ditches around. What's that? Also, what it also done, help us to collect a supply of water so we could have extra water for washing and shaving and that. We used to make trenches with corrugated tin. So you can make a channel down to store water type of thing. But also, when the monsoons came, the Imjin River would rise between 15 to 30 feet in height. So you had to be very careful with it. And one of the jobs we had was guarding a bridge called Till Bridge. And that was destroyed and it had to be rebuilt. But the only time it could be rebuilt was when it was a low tide, before the monsoons and after the monsoons, because when it goes to 30 or 40, what's name, forward patrol bases had to come back about 100, 200 yards because of the height for the river.
Now, any other things that have come up to your mind?
Sir? Yes. When I mentioned to you about the cold, the frost and the winters, because it went sometimes 40 below, 45 below, under each wagon or tanks or transport, you had to have a small fire lit because everything used to freeze, the petrol, everything. So it was a guard's job to make sure that there was a fire underneath the sumps to keep it lubricant fairly free so you could start up in a quick emergency. Also, if you was on guard duty, you was done up in parkas and gloves. And if you took your hand or glove off and put it onto metal, that would stick onto the metal chassis. And it would, if you pulled your hand off, you would also pull the flesh off. And it was very, very cold indeed. It's the coldest I've ever known, because the winds come from Manchuria down through the camps and the hills, and you could hear it whistling and freezing, and everything was solid type of thing.
Any other things that come to mind?
Oh.
Because we're just sort of tidying up now, you know.
Yeah.
The time in Korea.
I mean, after being there 6 months, as I said, I'd done that MO motor transport course.
And now, what about you? I know you learned to drive the Jeep, but we didn't really cover the MT course. Tell us a bit more about the actual training on MT.
MT transport people came down and said, "You've been here 6 months. Would anybody like to learn about driving?" So a number of people put their names up to it, and we learned about the engine, spark plugs, sump, check steering, check the wheels, and general safety in driving. And you, after a time, you could pass your test and get a license.
And you did, yeah, on the Jeep, yeah.
Yes.
Anything else you were doing, or was the rest of the routine we discussed last time?
Just mainly routine, yes.
Now, what happened after Christmas then?
We
discussed the Christmas.
Yeah. Well, after Christmas, we had a chance of going back to Japan again for R&R, rest and recuperation.
Again?
Yeah, once again.
And did you do it again?
Yes, yeah. This time I went to Tokyo and saw Mount Fujiyama.
Now, what do you remember about going to Tokyo? What was life like there on a holiday?
Vastly different to what's over. Everything was clean. The streets were clean because the people had a pride in cleanliness. They was polite. They would bow to you. You would bow back to them. The young students were learning English and were only too pleased to chat and talk with you. Out there we saw Fats Domino, Ella Fitzgerald in a show, and general tour around Tokyo.
So when you came back from local leave in Tokyo, what then?
Well, I was lucky enough, because I was interested in the cooking, they were kind of putting various people in different jobs, admin and all that. So they said to me, would you like to go to Incheon for a short spell of a few months? They're short of staff in the officer's mess. So I thought, He said, what you'll do, you'll help in the cookhouse, but you also help to serve behind the bar. You'll be dressed all the time and all that. And I met up with a Jimmy Lee, his name was. He was a Korean. He'd done the majority of the work there, and I met up with him. And there was a young Korean girl there, I forget what her name was now, and she was mainly doing the bedding and all this bit. So when I arrived, the major...
So you took this job? It's the Incheon leave camp, is it?
Yeah. And I took this job. Well, they asked for a number of people to go to various places because we was the getting ready to come home type of thing. So
what was this job called? I mean, were you a steward?
It was officer's mess steward. Mainly general dog's body, but also when they had functions, you served behind the bar, done waitering service. I mean, it was only for about 2 or 3 months, but it was quite good, quite interesting.
Now, tell me about that. What were the duties like? As much detail as you can remember. Because we don't get the chance to interview many who worked in the mess.
When I arrived, there was a sergeant there. I've seen him once or twice when I've gone to a reunion. I can't think what his name was now. And he was had a feminine side to him, you know. You'll do this, you'll do that. I don't want any back talk. And what's the name? So the bloke said, he's all right. He said, once he gets to know you, one of the lads. So I said, oh. So, of course, when you get there, they tell you how to lay a table out properly with all the nice forks and spoons. How to serve behind the bar the tots and write it in a book. Each officer has to sign the book, how much he has to drink. And what he said to me, what you want to do is put a mark with a pencil at the end of the day, the drink that is left. So I said, well, why is that? So he said, well, some of these perishers, he said, are coming late and take a quick one without signing a book. So you checked every morning. He said, what you've got to be careful with, some of them will take a drink and top it up with water out of the bottles. So I said, I learnt all that. And the major in charge was from the Scottish regiment. He was daft as a brush, really. He had a couple of dogs. He used to go out pheasant shooting. You hear bang, bang, you wonder what that is. So the sergeant would say, don't worry, that's the major out on his haunts. And one time he shot his dog because his dog wouldn't do what he was told. And also it was sniffing round the Korean dogs. So he called it a dirty dog and shot it. And he said, that dog's got to be buried now. He said, that's an order, bury that dog, he says. So we dug an hole and buried the dog. And of course, when it comes to officers' functions, they invited other people from, what's that? And you had to be a waiter, so they loaded the drinks up, you went round all this business. You was asked various questions by the officers, where you come from and how long you've been in Korea and all that business. Then, once they'd gone, then it was the washing up. You all mucked in and washing up. We had a room with about four of us in it with sheets and mattresses. It was a real, what they call a packer job. Not many people got these jobs. And, of course, they checked you whether you'd been in any trouble, background, all that. And that went on, I say, for about 3 months. Then,
and how did the officers behave on the mess and get nice?
Some got drunk as skunks. Others looked down on you as though you was a peasant type of thing, you know, and you was an ordinary person. One would say, did you see any action, my man? I said, no, sir, I got here just as it finished. We're the, what they call us, dustbin men. So he said, dustbin men? What do you mean by that? I said, we're the ones that cleared up the mess that the others left so we could put it back in order in case of emergency. Oh, he said, that's a rather novelty way of saying it, isn't it? So he said, you're the repairmen then. I said, well, other things, yes. And other than that, you used to hear some talking about the big houses they've got back home, the bank jobs they've got, and daddy's in the newspaper business, and mummy's got this, got a horse, they go show. And you say to yourself, it's a different world, you know, it's quite a different world.
But they treated you okay, most of them.
Yes.
I get the impression. Though. There's some snooty ones, but most of them were
all right. Yeah, yeah.
Because did you get tips and things like that?
Oh, no. No, there was nothing like that. No. No, they used to like going because the mess, whatever mess they visit to, that was their responsibility to feed, wine and dine you. And that come out of the officer's budget type of thing.
Anything happened while you were doing it? 2 or 3 months, this?
Yeah. No, nothing at all. No, it was just other than the mad Scotch major shooting his dog and that. But what I used to bring, he used to bring back the pheasants and he used to hang them up. Well, I mean, I've never seen a pheasant until there. And he used to hang them up and he used to say to the cook, now don't touch those birds I've shot. He said, I want them to mature. He said, then when you see them start moving about, he said, that is the maggots inside. And they're primed, ready to be cleaned out and cooked, he said. And that's the best way to serve them. And he used to have it done with rice and all this business. And I tried it, the pheasants, once, because they was no. And I thought it was just like a bit of chicken or turkey, really. But to them, it was a delicacy, you know.
Now, what happened after that? So you were there, this is in early 55, isn't it?
Early 55, yeah.
So what happens next?
Well, then we start getting ready to making plans to come home. We used to put a calendar up on the wall and we used to mark the days off what we've got left. And we always had a little ditty we used to say to all the newcomers in, because then they called you an old sweat because you've done your time, you've seen the summer, you've seen the winter. And we used to say, now I've only days to do, let me sing this song to you. Be your name Jack or John, well, your luck, and soldier on. Soldier on through thick and thin. While you're at it, get some in and get your knees brown. Because in the summer you swear short. And you could always tell a new person because they come in like a milk bottle and you was going out kind of suntan. Plus taking the malaria tablet used to make you go a kind of a yellowy brown type of thing. And you could always tell a new bunch. And of course you used to, when we got back, used to go into the mess or mess tent and that, have a few drinks. And they used to say, what's it like out? Oh, very tough, lad. When we was out here, it was this, it was that. Shoot them the stories. And you say, yeah, a bloke done this and a bloke done that. And, of course, we told them about finding the skulls and the bodies and all that. I said, but now it's near enough all cleared up. You've got new clean bunkers to move into and all that business. And you used to go, when I used to go out on patrols, you used to have a newbie, a new person, and you, and it used to be between you. So you'd have a bloke that's been there some time, a new person, and so forth, in the patrol. You used to go out and you used to say to them, watch that, there's old barbed wire, it's rusty. If you get caught on the wire, we pulled it straight away, and things like that. Beware of trenches, because when the green covers over, old trenches would still be there with barbed wire in them and you could actually fall into them. And also, we used to patrol along the paddy fields. And boy, did they stink if the wind was in the wrong direction. Because they collected, as I say, the honeypots, and they used to tip it over the rice fields. So you had a narrow, 2 foot strip in crisscross, in plots, and you used to walk along these, what's that? And if you happened to slip and put your boot in, or actually fell in, you finished the patrol and you was caked in it, and you used to smell type of thing. And we used to say to the new chap, now watch your footing, because if you fall in this, that means a number of injections, go to the hospital, probably have your stomach pumped out and all this business. And they soon learned. And
Now, so what preparations were you making for coming back? Was the whole battalion coming back?
No. It's certain sections. If you went out there, once you've done your time, say about 30, 40 of you would be ready to come back. What's that? Well, what we had to do then was get our kit, which we hadn't seen. Our kit bags were stored. When you got your, you had to get your kit and then come back and sort it out. It was crumpled. It was mouldy. A lot of stuff was missing out of the kit bags. So, of course, then after that, we got all our kit ready. We said our goodbyes and had a drink up.
Now, you were told about not taking stuff home that you acquired. Tell us about that.
Well, we got to all our kit, and the first thing the Sergeant Major said is, if you have excess kit, if you picked up a souvenir in the field, he said, my advice to you now is to dump it here. He said, because when you leave here, you'll be going to Japan to pick your boat up to come home, and the same thing will be done there. They're talking about like weapons, bullets, probably grenades, little daggers and knives and souvenirs. One of the blokes had a skull, what's that? And things like that. So, turfed it out. We said, well, half of the stuff has gone missing. He said, not worried about half of your stuff gone missing. He said, it's what you're taking out with you. So he said, anyway, when you get to Japan, he said, you will then, before you go on a boat, you will done it. So then from Korea, we went to Japan, got there, went to Kure. The boat would come in. Before the boat came in, you would have a general talk of what you've done, what you've seen. And they'll say, right, this section will be going on the Astorias or Empire. Well, and that. So once you get to Japan, your kit comes out again and they recheck your kit. He said, now is the time. This is the first and last time you will be told. Because if we come along and spot anything you was known, you could stay here for another couple of months instead of going home. So everything was the same. So, of course, I didn't smoke. I had cigarettes. I was taking them home for another bloke. A bloke had some cigars. So he says to one bloke, you can't have cigarettes and cigars. So they used to confiscate them. Well, we knew where they was going. So what's that? Well, while I was out there, I went into the kind of like, what they call it, PRI shop or the... What was the
American PRX or whatever.
PRX, yeah. And I, looking around, I saw a beautiful coffee set, bone china. And when you held the cups up, you could see the geisha. So I said to the lady, I'd like to send it home to me mum. So she said, well, yes, we'll pack it, we'll send it home. And when you get home, if anything is broken, don't hesitate to send it back to us and we will refurbish you with a new one. People were sending dolls home, which I took a couple of dolls home. So then, right, the ship comes in. You're allotted to your decks.
Which ship was it?
I think it was Empire Oil World coming home. Asturias going out, Empire Oil World coming home. And so you're allotted there. And then, because being first on the ship, you got various jobs. Mine was a... Because I was in the cooks, so what they done, they put me into the galley. There was about six of us into the galley. And we peeled potatoes, helped to serve up food. And because being the first on there, you've got a choice of, what's that, some went into the laundry, some acted as stewards. And that was just to, you know, get you on the way home. And coming back, once you're on the ship, coming back, you've called in various places like
Singapore. Now, hang on. You said it was Empire Orwell on the way out, but you think it was the Astoria?
Yeah, yeah.
Right, I'll change that in the cataloguing. Yeah. You can't obviously change it in the thing. Okay. So, and when, what month were you coming back? I know it took 6 weeks, but...
Yeah, we were coming back, must be about June-ish, because they got demobbed in July, June time.
Right, okay, so you were saying, sorry, I interrupted you to sort that out. So what do you remember of the ship then, the visits you went to?
We on the way back, it took longer coming back because she was calling in at different ports and picking chaps up for demob. One port, we pulled in at Singapore and we picked up 60 sailors of various ranks, and they come on board and they was a bit upset because they flew out to Singapore and they was expecting to fly home again. So we're down in the mess serving up the meals, and the trays, how they serve the meals up, it was a stamped out tray with various pockets in it, which you put potatoes, gravy, meat and the sweet all in the same tray. So that, and the boat left Singapore, and about 2 days after Singapore we had some bad weather, rough weather, and I would say 90% of the sailors were bad because they've never been to sea before. They flew out expecting to get flown home. So as I was coming down, you could see they wasn't too bad, and we were putting on it a bit like, would you like a nice bit of fatty pork? How about some of this greasy soup, greasy gravy? And they was going, and they'd run out, and of course, they were sick. And when you went to go into the toilet, it was everywhere. The basins were full, the toilets were smelly. And so we got chatting with the lads and said to them, you should eat something, even if it's only dry bread. Well, we was expecting to be flown home. I said, well, you don't always get what you want. So we said, well, don't forget, Lord Nelson, when he went to sea, he was always bad. But once you get over it, and once they settled down, it was quite all right.
Now, so you were working in the kitchens?
Yeah, galley.
In the galley, sorry, yeah. Of course, yeah. So what else do you remember about that trip home? Any of the places you visited?
Yes, it was Singapore, Colombo, Aden, Portside.
And what do you remember about any of these places? Or was it just a blur?
You didn't get a chance of going ashore there. You just loaded the people up, loaded new stores up, unloaded various... Because some people come from, like, Singapore and were going to Aden and vice versa. And we picked up some married people quarters and that. Of course, it was out of bounds again. They'd done guard. But being down in the galley, you used to get all the best. And the beer on board the ship was 8 old pence a pint. And it was very... And sometimes you got it for nothing. And of course, on board some of these ships, there was what we called then fairies. They was... I'm sexual, you might say, but they was fairies. And they always used to be in the laundry. And they always used to come along, hello, soldier. How'd you like these and all this? But it was a purely... You know, Jellville, what's that? When we used to share their mess room with them and laugh and joke and what's that? Because some of them, when they went on ships, some never came ashore or never been anywhere like Korea. So they used to ask you questions and all this. Well, we used to play cards. I didn't smoke, but we used to play pontoon, brag, solo, whist, just to pass the time. And I won, believe it or not, 1,000-odd cigarettes, and they was all loose in a blanket. So I said, well, I don't smoke, so I put them in a box. And that was mainly the money, was cigarettes. You played cigarettes, and that acted as money. So, of course, when we got near to Southampton, as we come through Suez Canal, coming across the Bay of Biscay, that was rough again. And as we're pulling into Southampton, I had all these fags. So I said to the crew members, you're quite welcome to them because I don't smoke and I don't want them. And they was over the moon. So they give me a bottle of whiskey. And another bloke gave me some cans of beer. He said, you might need these on your way home. So I said, thank you very much. We had a drink, shook hands, and the boat pulls in to Southampton. This is 4 o'clock in the morning. And none of us had been to sleep because we were rechecking our kit. So 4 o'clock in the morning. When we docked, we found that the Southern Region Railway was on strike. There was no trains or transport for us. So we had to wait for lorries. While I'm there, all of a sudden, comes over the tannoy, would Private Malcolm Barker of the North Hampshire Regiment please report to the purser's office. I thought, what have I done now? Had I signed a paper to stay on, and sometimes I wish I'd have signed a paper to stay on for 22 years and all this thought about it. Oh, by the way, while we was out there, reiterate, just before we left Korea, we had various people coming from various army units, Australians, New Zealand, Canadian, and that. They wanted us to transfer from our units on demob to their units. One, the pay was more. Two, we would get citizenship. And three, we would have an higher rank. They would either make us corporals or sergeants. That was on offer to everybody. So getting back, we pulled into Southampton. As I say, over the tannoy, Private Barker, please report the purse office. They said, oh, shouting out, you're in trouble, you're in trouble. And, of course, she was all in the battle dress. Of course, gets to the purser's office. They said, do you know somebody by the name of Taylor? I said, my auntie Rose married a Taylor, Ken Taylor. Only they're waiting on the docks for you. Well, quite a few families came to the docks to welcome you home. When I walked down the gangplank, my aunt Rose said, blimey, she said, I didn't recognise you. Look how tall and look how fit you are. Ken shook her hand, put her hand round and asked the question. The purser said, you will have 10 minutes. You will not pass anything over to your relations. Before you go ashore, you will make sure everything is left behind. And they kind of give you a quick search. So when you went down the game, stood there chatting a minute, and it said, will all troops please report aboard for further information for debarking? So that was that. So when we finally got off about 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning, we had to go by lorry. There was no railways. The railways were on strike. They give us, I'll never forget it, corned beef sandwiches, 2 hard-boiled eggs, and an apple, and a drink. So it was like a can of Coke or something. So once we got on to the docks, there was a final declaration before going out to the lawyers. So we're all lining up. Anything to declare, these MPs would come along and say, anything to declare, soldier, you say no. Don't believe you, tip your kit out. Yeah, tip all your kit out. You just about get through with those cigarettes. You've got too much, we take this. So when they come up to me, I had this bottle of whiskey and these cans of beer. So he said, well, you can either keep one or the other. You can't have the two. So I said, well, you can have the beer. I'll have the whiskey. Well, come, because the officers didn't think they was going to be sorted out. So as he came up the office, he said, all MPs had stripes because it made them senior. They was brand new uniforms, and you could see that they hadn't been in very long. They was pale compared to us. And comes up to Lieutenant Spooner, he says, and he care, he said, normal stuff. Tip your bag out, sir, he said, beg your pardon, you know I'm an officer. He said, here, we are in charge. So when he tipped it, I had more than what's name. So he said, you're over the limit, sir, we're going to confiscate. He said, just a minute. And he passed a bottle of whiskey down the ranks. The bottle come back empty. And he said, you're still over the limits. So what he done, he broke the bottle. He said, you're not having it, you so-and-sos. He said, you get posted into this country. We come back from abroad after being on classed as active service, and you want to take things away from us. So, and it was very adamant, so they took their names. So what they done then, they made us all tip our kit bags out, go for our packs and pouches and everything. And by the time we finished, they had a nice little week. So Lieutenant Spooner said, I'm sorry about that. He said, but I do begrudge giving it to these people who have never stepped off the shores of England. They may do in the future, but that's it. So up come the transport, 3-ton